It's fire danger season in the Murraylands, with the rest of our regions joining in from December 1. Brett Williamson from the CFS joins me in studio to discuss. Hi, Brett.
Hey, Jenny. How are you?
Yeah, really well, thank you. And it may be wet, but we're not really in the clear, are we?
It's amazing how some of the areas, particularly around here and through the Mount Lofty ranges, are either soppingly wet or almost ready to burn. And there's no difference between some of the areas. Some of them, it's wet under soil, but the grasses that are above them are actually cured and could potentially kick off a really good fire.
Yeah, so it's certainly a good time now to get around the property and pull out the weeds and that sort of thing. I've noticed as well, it seems like there's a lot more mowing going on the freeway and those sorts of areas.
Yeah, I think it's that time of the year, particularly for the councils to get into it. Sometimes with the later winters, it's hard for them because they'll have to mow 2 weeks later. I guess it's like everybody's house at the moment, that you're probably looking at the lawnmower and thinking, maybe I'll do it next weekend, and then next weekend it's up around knee height. So yeah, it's part of all the maintenance and preparing for the season, and it's good to see it getting done, and hopefully, you know, it'll spur a lot of people on to do the same around their house.
And there's already been a couple of fires in the district.
Yeah, we've had a couple of fires, particularly up in the northeastern pastoral. We had a couple that started from lightning a few weeks now. And one that we are seeing starting to pop up quite a bit now is haystack fires. These are a real heartbreaker for farmers, because when you look at a year like we've had with that delayed winter rain, they've had some really good growth. But the tricky part is that the moisture's still in the grasses and the cereals that they're harvesting. So when they wrap them wet, it does this unusual thing that it starts to kick off a bacterial reaction that generates heat,
right,
and that actually causes fires within hay sheds.
Is there anything that people could do in that scenario to prevent that?
There's a couple of really simple things that they can do if they are concerned about particularly the big round bales. Leave them out in the paddock, mm-hmm, because then if you do get one go off, you're not going to have the whole shed go. There's a good trick that a lot of the graziers and farmers do, where they get the steel spikes, so your crowbars, and they stab that in the middle of one of the round bales, leave it for a minute, come back and actually hold it. Steel's a really good conductor of heat, so if it's hot in the middle of the bale, that crowbar will be hot to touch, and they'll know that it's actually starting to get that chemical reaction going. And simple things like if you see steam or smoke start to wisp out of it, you know that there is something going on there, so separate it out as quickly as you can, and then, yeah, probably give us a call and we can help you either pull it apart and extinguish it or monitor it.
Are there many machinery fires?
Yeah, unfortunately that goes hand in hand. You get a lot of people that probably give a quick once over of their machinery but may miss a couple of things that are in there. Around harvesting time, you've got those fine fuels that collect in all the annoying places, and generally they're where heat is as well. And it can be something as simple as if you've left a tractor, like we saw one up around Perilla a couple of weeks back now, where there was a tractor that had been parked in a paddock for a week and they jumped in it and took off, and a couple of minutes later smoke started coming out and it was an $80,000 loss. So,
Wow. Yeah,
it's again, it's one of those things that makes it the difference between a really good year and a really bad year for farmers if they lose that kind of cost in machinery.
I hear there's a new code of practice for fuels as well.
Yeah, so the harvesting code of practice, or the voluntary code of practice that a lot of people harvest on, is adapting to the new systems that we're running with the Australian fire danger ratings as well. One thing hopefully that that farmers can be at comfort with is that there is a meeting point for this. So although the new fire behaviour indexes did come in September, what we've said is, look, it's into the season almost as that came in, so we're going to honour both ways to register. So they'll be familiar with terms like a grass fire danger index of 35. If that makes sense to you, then you can still use that.
Mm-hmm.
And the newer version of it, they'll start to basically put in 100% in the next season.
Okay, yep. And what exactly does fire danger season mean?
What it does is it is a legislative process that we do that enforces laws against doing activities that are likely to start a fire. So in basic, simple sense, it means we want to restrict you from doing activities that are likely to cause a fire, because as those seasons kick in, the difficulty of actually pulling up fires and the danger that they can do increases dramatically. So it's a pinpoint in a time that's agreed by bushfire management committees, where there's a whole heap of people from a community that get together. They make a suggestion of the date under the conditions that they're experiencing, and then that goes to the CFS, and our chief officer actually looks at it and goes, all right, we think that that's a good date, or we might need to adjust it a little bit. Then it goes and gets what they call gazetted, and it becomes law that that is what the dates are and when they start.
There's lots of different ifs, or, you know, if you're at a certain type of reserve or a certain type of park, or whether you can have barbecues, things like that. But it's essentially about trying to reduce the amount that people are cooking or have fires in those high risk areas, right?
Yeah, it's all about reducing that risk to have the potential of a fire starting. And you know, when you start to get into the different categories that we do for those days of danger, that is all about actually how difficult it will be to stop a fire if it starts, not how easy or hard it might be to start a fire.
I did not know that.
Yep.
Right.
So, yeah,
so how hard it would be to stop. So that makes sense that, you know, a catastrophic day might be really windy, really hot, really dry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a catastrophic day may be, and we've seen, unfortunately, some of these around the 2019-2020 seasons, where we had fires that we could not stop. We couldn't put our crews in front of them because it would have caused mass fatalities for our crews. So we had to say to them, we need you to fall back and basically try and protect the properties. And by that, I mean the buildings that you can, because we will not be able to stop this fire. We've got to wait for the weather to do something to basically drop the conditions down so that we can try and make some headway on it.
It was unprecedented, right?
Some of the
embers went.
Yeah, it was
so
pretty
high.
Awful. We had spot fires from Kangaroo Island around the 30 k's ahead of the fire front itself. We had conditions at midnight that were worse than midday. So there were just unfathomable conditions, and I think even some of the people that have been in the service for many, many decades couldn't believe what they were seeing.
So how can we be better prepared, Brett?
Well, that's the thing. It's all about preparation, really. Now's the time of year, particularly, to be cleaning up around the house, removing things that might be flammable. So if you've got particularly your gutters are clogged up, there's been a bit of rain with the storms that we've had go through. A lot of the leaves and twigs and that from trees, if you've got them around your house, will be clogging up the gutters probably now. A couple of months' time, or even a couple of weeks' time, they're going to be dry and they're going to be pretty much small fuel to be able to start a fire. If you do get a fire in the area, an ember goes into that, then it gets into your roof space, and it's just those sorts of things that will burn a house down. So by reducing that risk, it's definitely going to help you a lot. Making sure you've got that 5-minute bushfire survival plan. So make sure you've actually got a couple of avenues that you can pretty much pick up a bit of paper and go, all right, we've got a fire in the area.
Yep.
This is what I've got planned to do. Then if you get out and you think, oh, hang on, a tree's fallen over that road, I can't get out. What's your second option?
Yeah.
You know, what's your third option?
Ahead of time, think about
it.
Yeah,
and it's really scary that even in the recent research that came out a couple of years back now, it's as much as 50% of people are waiting until they see flames before they make a decision, and that's way too late.
Yeah. So having a plan, thinking about where, you know, even thinking about pets, dropping them off somewhere the night before if it's going to be a catastrophic day, cleaning up around the property, making sure your kids are involved in the plan, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
That's a good one that we quite often forget. If you've got children and they're able to do so, if you can give them a specific task to do, it actually empowers them. So it helps them be part of your preparation and also helps them hopefully be part of the solution as well. But if you've got a job for them, and even if it's as simple as they've got a box that's got their toys in it and some other bits and pieces that they've collected, if you're saying, all right, we're going to put our bushfire survival plan into place, get ready and rehearse it so that they're comfortable with doing it. If it's their job to get the dog or the cats or the chooks or whatever else you've got, you know, that that you do want to move with you, then give them that specific job and give them that empowerment to be able to help you when things do go bad.
It might help you too, because muscle memory is a powerful thing, and people panic. People like run around in circles sometimes thinking, what do I need? Like grabbing lollies, like, you know, knowing what you need to take with you, maybe even having it ready to go if there's going to be a catastrophic day the next day.
Yeah.
Just knowing, having a list, just being prepared when you're, you know, in a better frame of mind.
And I think the other thing that we always find when you talk to people who have sadly lost their properties in fires is it's the things that they didn't remember at the time that they miss the most. So even if it's one of those things where you've got a quiet weekend, we can always probably beg for those every now and then, and you've got a bit of time, maybe scan some family photos that you've got. And you know, if you're technical enough, put them into a cloud-based server somewhere or put them on a hard drive and take them to work. So yeah, then you've got that backup that if something goes wrong at home, then at least you've got those memories for you. Mm. Because that's the kind of thing that you unfortunately will not remember to take, or you'll grab some, but then you'll think later, I wish I had have taken that, or you know, mum gave me this and she's no longer with me, or those sorts of things. So yeah, have, if you can, a little bit of downtime, whether it's 5 minutes or half an hour or an hour, and really sit down and think, what's important to me in this house or my unit or wherever you're living? What would I really be upset if I couldn't take with me? And maybe plan to try and figure out if you can move that to a different location or make a copy of it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. Really lovely to have you in the studio today, Brett Williamson from the CFS. Cheers.
Thank you.